Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's definitely a milestone. The last convoy of U.S. combat troops left Iraq last night. We're going to be talking about this all morning on The Takeaway. And Miles O'Brien sitting in for John this morning. I mean, we have both been covering the Iraq War in one way or another since it began.
Yeah, it brings back a lot of memories. You know, I think of that shock and awe night. It's like it was
shock
yesterday.
Shock and awe.
Yeah, remember
yeah.
that?
It doesn't seem 7.5 years ago.
It seems quaint. I almost feel like we were duped at that on that night anyhow.
Well, the last combat troops are out, and it's ahead of the official end of combat operations, which is supposed to be August 31st. But it is not the end of our involvement in Iraq. We have another 6,000 troops that will leave the country by the 1st of September. And six U.S. brigades, totaling some 50,000 troops, will stay behind for so-called non-combat operations. Obviously, there's some scars remaining from the war. 4,415 U.S. servicemen and women have been killed since the 2003 invasion. 31,000 and more were wounded, and the war has challenged some ideals of military and moral might. We're joined now by Hans Blix. He served as Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency from 1981 to 1997, and then he was tapped to lead the UN committee that was searching for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to take you back in time just a little bit. You led UN weapons inspectors into Iraq before the U.S.-led invasion. You found nothing. That clearly did not stop the invasion. And I wanted to play for you this clip of President Bush announcing that the invasion of Iraq had begun.
At this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
This was a war that you tried to stop. It was a war that you called illegal. What were your feelings when you heard President Bush making that announcement?
Well, I was sad that we had failed to prevent military action. We would have been helpful if we had could have continued the inspections. I think a few months more of inspection would have undermined the alleged evidence that the U.S. and the U.K. Presented and thereby made any military action more difficult.
Well, have your feelings changed at all? I mean, do you now feel that there was something positive that came out of the U.S. invasion?
No, only the toppling of Saddam Hussein. He was a horrible dictator, a brutal figure, and that was a blessing. But what followed was not the peace and quiet that the U.S. had expected and predicted, but rather years of anarchy, and perhaps one might even say that anarchy at times turned out to be worse than terror.
Do you think it's fair to say at this point the war is over?
Well, the war, active war, is over, but the wounds that were inflicted have not been healed. It's up to the Iraqis to try to bridge the gaps and to try to get a balance between the groups, the Kurds and the Sunnis and the Shiites and the Christians and others, in the same sort of balancing act that Lebanon has succeeded in the past. It's not easy, but that's what they need to do if they want to avoid civil war and perhaps foreign intervention again.
We have some of the same sort of ominous rumblings now coming out of Iran. Russia is preparing to transfer to Tehran some low-enriched uranium to fuel an Iranian nuclear power plant. Let me play for you this clip from John Bolton. He's the former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. He was speaking on Fox News Tuesday.
Well, the Russians and the Iranians announced last week that they're going to begin inserting the fuel rods into the Bushehr reactor this Friday. So that's really the point at which those rods are either in the reactor or so close to it that an attack on it would release radiation into the atmosphere or the water.
I'm wondering if you hear echoes here of the run-up to the Iraq war when you hear this kind of thing.
Well, Mr. Bolton has always been very militant, and I think he stood for a policy that clearly failed in case of Iran. He wanted, like the Bush administration, to isolate Iran. They said that you must suspend the enrichment program, and if you do that, then we are willing to talk to you. It was a precondition, and the Iranians were not that interested in suspending it. So the program just continued. I think the old Mr. Obama has been much wiser in saying that, no, we are willing to talk to you at any time. We still wish Iran to suspend the enrichment, or at least to get conditions under which we are sure that they will not produce nuclear weapons. There is a greater hope, and there is now a prediction of talks in September of this year, though I think they will begin to be limited to the delivery of 20% fuel for the Triga reactor, which is a research reactor producing medical isotopes for medical uses outside Tehran. But that could be a start of a broader negotiation. So it's a little more hopeful, but still a very, very difficult controversy.
So you think that Iran and Ahmadinejad could be better diplomatic partners, or perhaps more trustworthy than Saddam Hussein was?
Well, they are not easy customers. I'm not suggesting that. But nevertheless, I think Saddam was a different cup altogether. He was brutal, and I don't think he had a clear idea of the world. He was isolated, and the people didn't dare to tell him about the reality. And I think he had the illusion that he would get away, both with inspectors and sanctions. The Iranians, I think, are much more sophisticated. They have much more open society, and so talks are much more meaningful in their case. Now, we don't know whether they really want to go for weapons. That has been the assumption, and there are many reasons why one can suspect it. They say themselves, on the other hand, that they want only to produce fuel for the reactors. Now, the acceptance of Russian fuel on the Bush reactors perhaps is an argument for the Western side, for the outside world. We can tell the Iranians that, look, you don't really need to produce your own fuel because you are getting it from the Russians, and there can be guarantees about it in the future. I think that's why there is no strong reaction against the fuel, the 3.5% rich fuel for the reactor.
Let me ask you the same question that we're asking our listeners all morning, which is, what do you think will be the legacy of the U.S. invasion of Iraq?
As a terrible mistake, as a failure that cost a great number of lives, American lives and injured people, and even more Iraqi lives, and also as undermining the view of the United States as a country exercising some restraint and some wisdom. And I do hope that this memory will also work on the case of Iran. In the case of Iraq, there was a war lodged against for the eradication of weapons that didn't exist. In the case of Iran, we are seeing people calling for armed action against alleged intentions.
Hans Blix was the Director General of the IAEA, tapped to lead the UN Committee searching for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.